As we begin, I'd like for us to turn to the Great Hall of Faith, chapter Hebrews, chapter 11. And we're going to begin reading there in verse 32. Hebrews chapter 11, beginning in verse 32, and we'll read down through verse 34. 32 through 34 of Hebrews chapter 11. The writer says, "And what more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the armies of the aliens." These six men all had a tremendous impact upon the lives of God's people. The first name listed there, Gideon, was probably the least likely to be a hero. Hero being a person who in the face of danger or adversity shows courage even to the point of self-sacrifice. We'll see in a minute when we go back to Judges chapter 6 that we will look at the life of Gideon and see that he was indeed an unlikely hero. One person said, "I think a hero is an ordinary individual who finds strength to persevere and endure in spite of overwhelming obstacles." But Jehovah often used unlikely people to carry out His will. And that's one of the important lessons to learn this morning. God often used very unlikely people to carry out His will. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, in this first recorded letter we have to the church at Corinth, beginning in chapter 1, verse 26, Paul writes to those Christians there in the city of Corinth, "For you see your calling, brethren, that not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise. And God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things which are mighty, and the base things of the world and the things which are despised. God has chosen, and the things which are not, to bring to nothing the things that are, that no flesh should glory in His presence." God uses unlikely people to carry out His will. So when we turn back to Judges chapter 6, we see the account of Gideon. And the first thing we notice is the background to Gideon being in the land and what Gideon was doing and what Israel was doing at this time. In Judges chapter 6, beginning in verse 1, it says, "Then the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. So the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian for 7 years. There's the background for Gideon becoming an unlikely hero. Israel did what was evil. They had turned from Jehovah to worshiping idols. They had become idol worshipers. And the hand of Midian prevailed against Israel. Because of the Midianites, the children of Israel made for themselves the dens, the caves, and the strongholds which are in the mountains. So it was whenever Israel had sown, Midianites would come up. Also Amalekites and the people of the east would come up against them, then they would encamp against them and destroy the produce of the earth as far as Gaza and leave no sustenance for Israel, neither sheep nor ox nor donkey, for they would come up with their livestock and their tents, coming in as numerous as locusts. Both they and their camels were without number, and they would enter the land to destroy it." Now here God is using the Midianites and the Amalekites to discipline His people. He's trying to get idolatry out of their system. So how's He doing that? He's basically having, you know, they go through the normal planting and so forth, and what happens? These pagan nations, these pagan people who look like they were without number, there were so many of them, would come and encamp and destroy everything. So that Israel had nothing to eat. So essentially, God was causing a famine for Israel. Not because He hated Israel, but because He loved Israel. And He was trying to rid Israel of idolatry, because they had turned from him to false gods. So in verse 6, so Israel was greatly impoverished because the Midianites and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. They had reached a state of deprivation. They had nothing. These Midianites and Amalekites had came in and had taken everything, so they were in a state of poverty. That's how bad things were for Israel. So the people cry out, and it came to pass when the children of Israel cried out to the Lord because of the Midianites. It was a cry of anguish. Look at what the Midianites are doing to us, Lord. We're your people. What's going on? So the Lord sent a prophet to the children of Israel who said to them, thus says the Lord God of Israel, I brought you up from Egypt and brought you out of the house of bondage, and I delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians and out of the hand of all who oppressed you and drove them out before you and gave you their land. Also I said to you, I'm the Lord your God. Do not fear the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But you have not obeyed my voice. This was why the prophet was sent. This is why God chose a prophet to send to the Israelites, to remind them of why this was happening. Now God said, look at your history. You know the history, how your ancestors were in Egypt and how I delivered them. And how other nations had oppressed you and came in, and what had I done? I delivered you. Says you shouldn't be fearing or respecting these false gods. This has all happened. Why? Because you didn't obey my voice. They had turned their backs on Jehovah. And Jehovah said, that's why this is happening. That's why I'm doing this. So now we see what Gideon does. Verse 11, now the angel of the Lord came and sat under the terebinth tree, which is in Ophrah, which belonged to Joaz the Abizrite, while his son Gideon threshed wheat in the winepress in order to hide it from the Midianites. So first of all, we see Gideon hiding. We see Gideon in fear. Why was Gideon threshing wheat or grain in a winepress instead of on the threshing floor? Very simple. Threshing floor was on the level ground. The people could see him. So what he was doing, he took the grain into the wine press, which was below ground where people couldn't see him, and that's where he was threshing grain, so he could hide. So Gideon, we see him hiding. We see his fear. We can almost picture him nervously looking above the sides to see if the Midianites were close. He was scared. Verse 12. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said to him, the Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor. And Gideon said, O my Lord, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? And where are all his miracles which our fathers told us about, saying, did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now the Lord has forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites. See, he's scared, and he's scared because he doesn't believe God is there anymore. He says, where is God? Where's the miracles? Where's God delivering us? Why is this happening? See, he's scared because he doesn't think God is with Israel anymore, that he's just turned them loose and forgotten about them. Well, he goes on, then the Lord turned him and said, go in this might of yours, and you shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have I not sent you? So he said to him, O my Lord, how can I save Israel? Indeed, my clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I'm the least in my father's house. And the Lord said to him, surely I will be with you, and you shall defeat the Midianites as one man. But he said to him, if now I found a favor in your sight, then show me a sign that it's you who talk with me. Do not depart from here, I pray, until I come to you and bring out my offering and set it before you. And he said, I will wait until you come back. Now what is he afraid of? Well, now he's afraid he doesn't have the ability to do it. He says, I'm the weakest in Manasseh. I'm the most feeble. God, why in the world would you choose me? I'm nothing. I don't have any ability. I'm just a plain old ordinary guy. I'm not powerful. I'm not strong. I'm weak. Why me? Well, we go down to verse 25. Now it came to pass the same night that the Lord said to him, take your father's young bull, the second bull of 7 years old, and tear down the altar of Baal that your father has, and cut down the wooden image that's beside it. And build an altar to the Lord your God on top of this rock in the proper arrangement, and take the second bull and offer a burnt sacrifice with the wood of the image which you shall cut down. So Gideon took 10 men from among his servants and did as the Lord had said to him, but because he feared his father's household and the men of the city too much to do it by day, he did it by night. Now we see something in addition that he's afraid of. Now notice all the things that Gideon's been afraid of. He's been afraid that God has forsaken them and he's not there anymore. He's afraid that he doesn't have the ability to do it. He's too weak. He's too feeble. Now he fears his father's family and the men of the city. It's one fear after one fear after another fear. He's afraid. He's afraid. One more thing he's afraid of. Chapter 7, down at verse 9. It happened on the same night that the Lord said to him, arise, go down against the camp, for I have delivered it into your hand. But if you are afraid to go down to the camp with Shura your servant, and you shall hear what they say, and afterward your hand shall be strengthened to go down against the camp. Then he went down with Pura his servant to the outpost of the armed men who were in the camp. So he was afraid to check out the enemy by himself. So he was afraid that God wasn't with Israel anymore, that God had forsaken them. He was afraid he didn't have any ability to do it, that he was weak and feeble. He feared his father's family. He feared the men of the city. And now when he was getting ready to go down to the enemy, he was afraid to go by himself. Notice that word that keeps cropping up. Afraid, afraid, afraid. I fear them. I fear this. I fear that. Gideon's fear. But there's victory in his future. If we go back to chapter 6, verse 12, remember what the angel of the Lord told him? He said, and the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said to him, the Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor. This is a prophecy. Angel of the Lord's coming down and saying, Gideon, you're not a poor, helpless, weak, feeble person. You're a mighty man of valor. Of valor. What's that going to do? It's supposed to pump him up. Isn't that the way we are? Some of you can do it. You know, the little train or engine that could. You can do it. That's what the angel of the Lord is saying. You are a mighty man of valor. You do have what it takes. You do have the strength to do it. Gotta believe in himself. Remember in verse 14, the Lord turned him and said, go in this might of yours and you shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have I not sent you? He said, I am the one that has appointed you. Gideon, you're anointed for this. This is what you're supposed to do. I've appointed you to be a deliverer. A deliverer. If we go back to Joshua chapter 1, let's notice verse 9 of that particular text. Joshua chapter 1, beginning in verse 9. Notice how similar this sounds. Of course, this was God speaking to Joshua. Verse 9 of Joshua chapter 1. Have I not commanded you, be strong and of good courage? Do not be afraid nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. See, that's what God has told Gideon. Be strong, be courageous, because God is with you. God can see the future. God assures him of victory. In chapter 6, verse 22. Let's go back to verse 21, actually. Then the angel of the Lord put out the end of the staff that was in his hand and touched the meat and the unleavened bread, and fire rose out of the rock and consumed the meat and the unleavened bread, and the angel of the Lord departed out of his sight. Now Gideon perceived that he was the angel of the Lord, so Gideon said, alas, O Lord God, for I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face. Then the Lord said to him, "Peace be with you. Do not fear. You shall not die." So Gideon built an altar there to the Lord and called it, "The Lord is Peace." To this day, it's still an Ophrah of the Abiezrites. God had assured him beforehand of victory. Jehovah was his peace. So there was no reason to go into battle afraid or lacking courage or not thinking that you have the ability, because God said, "I'm going to be with you to give you peace. I'm going to comfort you from your fear and your not having courage." He says, "I'm going to be with you. I'm going to take away that fear if you will let me." And God gave him evidence of that. Still in chapter 6, going down to verse 36. This is one of the stories we remember when we were young about the fleece. But we have to understand why God did it. Verse 36 of chapter 6, "So Gideon said to God, 'If you will save Israel by my hand, as you have said, look, I should put a fleece of wool on the threshing floor. If there's dew on the fleece only, and it's dry on all the ground, then I shall know that you will save Israel by my hand, as you've said.' And it was so, when he rose early the next morning and squeezed the fleece together, he wrung the dew out of the fleece, a bowl full of water. Then Gideon said to God, 'Do not be angry with me, but let me speak just once more. Let me test, I pray, just once more with the fleece. Let it now be dry only on the fleece, but on all the ground let there be dew,'" which would be much more of a miracle in that sense. "And God did so that night. It was dry on the fleece only, but there was dew on all the ground." God gave Gideon all the evidence that Gideon needed. He didn't need any more. In Hebrews 11 that we started at, we sometimes call it the Hall of Faith because those people listed all did things by faith. Many of them did things that they were not sure about, and without faith they would have been too afraid to do it. People like Gideon. And we read there in chapter 6 about Gideon's fear, about him being afraid. If I was to ask people to write down the things they fear the most, you probably would be like other people. Usually at the top of the list it's death. Sometimes the top of the list is speaking in front of people. I'm glad I don't have that fear. I'd be in bad shape. But that's a big fear with a lot of people. Some people are afraid, of course, of their enemies. Some people are afraid of failure. They don't even try because they're afraid they're going to fail. And afraid of what that's going to feel like and what people may say about it. Some people are afraid of inadequacies, of not being able to do what needs to be done. And of course, some people are afraid of the future. But how do we combat that? How do we combat fear being God's people? Well, one of the ways is what we're doing now, worship. Coming together as one people to worship God is a way to combat fear. Because we see those of like precious faith being together, being of one mind, all striving together. So we have that combined strength. We combat fear with thanksgiving, by being thankful about all the things that have already been done. Remember, that's what God told Gideon. You know, remember what was done in Egypt. Brought you out of Egypt, your people. Those people who were oppressing you, they were taken care of. Remember the past and service. We can combat fear by serving other people. Everybody has fears. Everybody has fears. We also saw in chapter 6, one of the things that needed to be done was what? In verses 25 and 26, Gideon was told to take the father's young bull, the second bull is 7 years old, and tear down the altar and sacrifice it. Now remember, Israel was in a famine. All the flocks had been destroyed. They didn't have any food. Where did the bulls come from? Where did the bulls come from? They had obviously been hidden from the enemy somehow. So the people were starving, they were hungry, there was a famine, but they weren't going to destroy these bulls. Because these bulls were going to be used as a sacrifice. As a sacrifice. Consecration. Consecration. It's costly. Now think about these bulls being destroyed and how many people those bulls could have fed. Costly sacrifice. God's people, sometimes their sacrifices are costly. Especially in today's world when we openly confess our beliefs. Especially today when you're looked down upon if you don't go with the crowd and if you don't accept all of their immoral acts and so forth, you're looked down upon. But for us, that cost is necessary. So what if the world doesn't like us? So what if the world doesn't agree with us because we're doing what God tells us to do? And we can't back down. Again, we saw that in chapter 6. In verses 31 and 32, Judges chapter 6. But Joash said to all who stood against him, "Would you plead for Baal? Would you save him? Let the one who would plead for him be put to death by morning. If he's a god, let him plead for himself because his altar has been torn down." Therefore on that day he called in Jerubbaal, saying, "Let Baal plead against him because he has torn down his altar." What led Joash to do this? The men had came out and said, "Bring out your son that we can kill him. Because he's destroyed the altar of Baal." So the father gets up and speaks out and says, "No, if Baal is really a god, let Baal come out and do it." And of course, Baal wasn't a god. So we can't back down. There's another lesson to learn. We cannot back down. We have to publicly display our Christianity. A faith that is only a personal faith, one in private, is not worth having. If you're only going to display your Christianity and your faith in private, then you might as well get rid of it. It's not any good. In other words, we're to live our faith out 24/7, regardless of where we are. We just can't be Christians at home when we're within our four walls. We have to be Christians everywhere, at all times, regardless of who we're with or where we are. That's what we must do. We have to show our commitment. And finally, there again in chapter 6, verse 33, "Then all the Midianites and Amalekites, the people of the east, gathered together, and they crossed over and encamped in the valley of Jezreel. But the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon. Then he blew the trumpet, and the Abizrites gathered behind him, and he sent messengers throughout all Manasseh, who also gathered behind him. He also sent messengers to Asher, Zebulun, and Naphtali, and they came up to meet them." We don't get to pick the time for our faith to be seen. We can't just tell others, we can't just show that we're Christians when we're with people whom that won't bother. We have to be willing to let our faith be seen at all times. We always have to be ready, regardless of the circumstances. We need to be God's trumpet, like was blown there. We need to be God's mouthpiece. In other words, we have to take a stand. We can't sit on the sidelines. We have to join in. Christianity is not a religion of sitting on the sidelines. Christianity is a faith that's active. It's not just one we think about. It's something that we must do. Gideon was an unlikely hero. When you look at his background, when you look at him, and he was an unlikely hero, but God used him in a very important way. And he's an example of how God can use anyone to bring about His will. Because when God looks at us, He does not see us for what we are, but for what we can become through Him. We don't do things on our own. It's through God. And that's how Gideon was able to accomplish what he accomplished. God was with him. God was with him. We saw how he was afraid. We saw how all the things that he feared. But what did he do? He went ahead regardless. Yeah, there could have been severe consequences, but he did it anyway. We can't be afraid of our world. Jesus told his disciples, the world hated me, they're going to hate you. They're going to hate you. But he said, you can't be afraid of that. You have to go out into the world and live your Christianity regardless. He says, don't be afraid of those people who can kill the body but can't do anything to the soul. He says, the only person you should fear ever is the one who's able to destroy both body and soul in hell. That's the only one to ever fear. And that's what we learn from Gideon. Yes, he's an unlikely hero. We have to have courage. It takes courage to become a Christian. It takes courage to confess. It takes courage to repent. It takes courage to be baptized. It takes courage to continue to confess wrongs. It takes courage to do that. It takes courage to stand for what's right. But that's what God desires. And we want to hear, well done, good and faithful servant. And if you want to hear that and you need to respond, then we don't want you to wait, but come as we stand and sing this song.